So don't forget, you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.FM. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. We're broadcasting to you on 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia and via the World Wide Web on KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Storytime with Book Signing with Tanya Lippert on Saturday, July 6th at 1 p.m. at Books Around the Corner in Gresham. Tanya Lippert is releasing the book Goodbye School, where the main character Franny is preparing to move to a new school and saying goodbye to the old school. Again, that's a Storytime and Book Signing with Tanya Lippert on Saturday, July 6th at 1 p.m. at Books Around the Corner, 40 Northwest 2nd Street in Gresham. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. Happy Independence Day. This is Fight the Empire. I guess this country fought one empire and started another one. But anyway, we're going to start the morning off with a couple remarks. One of them comes from Fox News announcer Tucker Carlson, who I normally disagree with very much. But he was talking about John Bolton recently, and he called John Bolton, quote, a bureaucratic tapeworm that lives forever in the bowels of Washington, D.C. So I thought that was pretty good. That was worth passing on. The other remark is really very strange. It comes from Miriam Adelson. Now, she is the wife of Sheldon Adelson, the casino mogul, billionaire, who started a newspaper called Israel Hayom. It's got the biggest circulation in Israel, I think partly because it's a free newspaper. So Adelson bankrolls it. And basically it's to have a right-wing voice, as if Israel needed another one. I suppose to rival Haaretz, which is a more or less liberal newspaper. But anyway, Sheldon Adelson's wife, Miriam, has written an article called A Time of Miracles, in which she really praises Donald Trump to the skies, to the heavens, as it were. I mean, that he's fulfilled his promises. This is a quote from her. Under his watch, America has finally made good on its decades-old pledge to formally recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital and move the U.S. embassy there. And she also goes on to Trump declaring the Golan Heights to be Israeli territory, and also praising Donald Trump from pulling the U.S. out of the nuclear deal with Iran, which Miriam Adelson calls a contemporary echo of the Munich Agreement. She says Trump and his senior staff have also dispensed with what she calls the useless mold of the so-called peace process. Anyway, so she, after praising Donald Trump, she really seriously thinks that would it be too much to pray for a day when the Bible gets a book of Trump, much like it has a book of Esther celebrating the deliverance of the Jews from ancient Persia? Well, I don't know. Imagine that. Imagine opening your family Bible and finding a book of Trump in there along with everything else. Anyway, those are the couple of remarks of the day. Let's talk about America at the age of 243. Actually, this country grew and prospered with the age of cheap energy. First it was coal, then it was oil. Coal powered the trains that crisscrossed the newly conquered continent. And oil brought the age of the automobile and air travel. Plastics, factory farms brought all these things in an age of seemingly endless growth. The thing to remember, though, is that the oil in the ground took millions of years to form, apparently 65 to 150 million years to get there. And in the 243 years that America has been a nation, America, leading the world, used up half of that oil, which took millions of years to get there. And the other half can't be used because it would wreck the climate more than it's been wrecked already. Well, when you look at those numbers, you think this looks very much like a dead end. But our leaders keep plowing on. They keep fighting wars for oil. The interesting thing here is that the war machine itself uses up more oil. And the U.S. war machine, it pollutes more, throws more dirt into the air and the environment than any of 140 other countries. But apparently we can't stop now. We have to keep doing this. It's like the addict is craving the poison that's killing him. So when we got this bonanza of cheap oil, cheap resources, it was a one-time deal. And we could have used it wisely, but in my point of view, I don't think we did. And some people say that the U.S. has just been acting like human beings everywhere have acted, that the human species has evolved to kind of fill every niche in the world. Every opportunity that's there to be exploited, humans are evolutionary, they're programmed to fill those niches. And the result has been that a lot of species have been kind of taken out of existence, that the part of the world that is given over to other creatures shrinks while the human area keeps expanding. And this kind of, in a way, this describes the United States. We were born with all these riches. We were free to kind of live large and squander, and kind of it was very liberating for a lot of people coming from Europe, where the land and resources have been used up. This is considered this is like a bonanza and like an endless paradise, and which is what it was portrayed as. Once the U.S. had conquered this land, they needed people to fill it, you know, their own kind of people, which meant other Europeans, and that's when this whole immigration thing began. You had real estate hucksters traveling around Europe. I think of Norway, where good farmland is pretty scarce, and these real estate promoters were going from one village to another, telling the farmers, "Come to America. There's free land. All the land you can use," and that's what they did. That's where this kind of immigration myth began. Well, you think it can't go on forever, and it has ended in a sort of a gradual way through something which we call EROI, and that stands for Energy Return on Investment. In other words, you put a certain, to get oil out of the ground, to get energy out of the ground, you have to put energy into the project. Like an example, the first U.S. oil well back in, I think it was 1859 in Pennsylvania, they dug down and they struck oil at 69 feet. And after that came these gushers from Texas and Oklahoma, where you drill down a ways and out comes the oil shooting up into the sky and all over the land just from the pressure that it was under when it was in the earth. Well, since then, the wells have gotten deeper and deeper, gone under the ocean, horizontal wells, all kinds of things, and finally leading up to what we do now is fracking, where you inject sand and chemicals into this porous rock and kind of coagulate the oil that's there and then bring it out. And this is kind of, I think of it as like the addict is trying to lick the inside of the pill bottle. And this obviously, this has proved, it's giving us quite a lot of oil now, although the amount of energy it takes to get that oil keeps rising, so the net gain keeps shrinking until eventually it's going to shrink to not enough to make the project worthwhile. So we are facing a world without oil, which might be a good thing as far as the environment goes. Right now, what would the world without oil look like? Well, for one thing, the war machine would be left without a lot of its hardware. Planes would be grounded, warships would be docked in flooded naval bases. There'd be no air travel. Global trade would shrink drastically, probably shrink to near nothing, instead of good trade with countries halfway around the world. Communities would be trading with other communities maybe a few hundred miles away. So that's the kind of what we can foresee. The U.S. is switching, there's a lot of talk about switching to renewables, which should have been done, started 20 or 30 years ago, but it's much more recent than that. Renewables would produce electricity, you know, from hydroelectric, from solar power, maybe from geothermal or tidal power. So it'd be all electricity. And like I said, the air travel would be gone because, as far as I know, there's no way to run a plane on electricity. I have seen a few stories about very ultra-light aircraft that traveled around the world on solar power. They had solar panels in these wings. And well, they carried one, maybe two people, but you can't scale that up to an airliner that carries a couple hundred people. So the U.S. Is kind of at the age of 243. The U.S. is kind of in a bind. We have they tell us that the economy is booming. The stock market is doing very well, but the stock market only measures how the economy looks to investors. And for them, it's looking pretty good, but it doesn't measure you can just look around and see all the people who are living in the streets. It doesn't measure I don't think it takes into account this this huge debt we have that ultimately it has to be repaid. If it doesn't get repaid, then everything kind of grinds to a halt. So here the U.S. has this huge ballooning debt, stagnant economy, and it's losing wars, constant wars that never get settled, and it doesn't really know who to fight next. A very strange thing of President Trump is, at least for the moment, is pushing peace with North Korea at the same time that he's pushing war with Iran, at the same time that Trump and the aforementioned John Bolton bungled their hostile takeover of Venezuela. The Democrats, on the other hand, they seem to favor war with Russia. And a very strange thing with the Democrats, when Trump took a few steps into North Korea and met with President Kim, the Democrats were up in arms, you know. This is a terrible thing he was doing. Well, I can't agree with that. As crazy and bullying as Trump is, somehow he manages to kind of break a little bit of the ice that we have built up with North Korea. So I don't know. This is a chance for listeners to call in. What do you think? Do you think Donald Trump did the right thing in Korea? The number to call is 503-231-8187. This is a nice holiday. Kind of sleep in, fire up the barbecue, and get things going. But I hope you're listening to KBOO because it's your radio station. And give us a call, 503-231-8187. One of the people who, among the Democrats who have been kind of pushing for war, has been Adam Schiff, who has been very prominent in the news. He is the chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, and he is one of the people who's really been pushing, Russiagate and the impeachment of Donald Trump. And there's an interesting article by in Consortium News by John Kiriakou. Now, Kiriakou is a whistleblower. He was a former counterterrorism officer, an investigator with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and he became the sixth whistleblower indicted by the Obama administration under the Espionage Act, and he served almost 2 years in prison because of his whistleblowing. But he wrote an article on Adam Schiff, who was called the left wing of the hawk, and basically saying that Adam Schiff is pushing for war on Iran. He, this is what Kiriakou says: Schiff has watched Trump tear up the Iran nuclear deal. He's watched the U.S. send troops to the Middle East to step up pressure on Iran. He's watched war lovers John Bolton and Mike Pompeo promise in public to violate international law by attacking Iran. And what is his response? It's to tell us, quote, "I've read classified documents. If you've seen what I've seen, you would want to attack Iran too. You would want to overthrow Venezuela too. Just take my word for it." Okay, well, we have two callers on the line. Bruce is first. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. I really enjoyed that Tucker Carlson quote about a tapeworm. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
I just want to know, with your perspective, doesn't this The parade today, the Trump military parade, kind of remind you of the Brezhnev era, when they'd look and, oh boy, look at the Soviets parading all that stuff down, you know, by the Politburo, all that military hardware. Mm-hmm. It was just horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard that these are kind of worn out old tanks that they're putting on display. I haven't really read that much about it. It's just that it's kind of a departure from our usual 4th of July celebrations, you know. But it seems to be in keeping with Trump's view of the world. The world is made to be bullied, and I think that's what he's trying to do. I think he was inspired by some parade in France when he was over there a year ago or something like that. But it, to me, yes, it is bizarre.
Well, wasn't that the parade with Macron, and he was just so enamored of seeing all that hardware come down the Champs-Élysées that he said, well, this is what we've got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's keeping a promises kept, Pear.
Oh boy.
Hey, thank you.
Well, thank you for that remark. And Linda's next. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Pear. Thanks for the show. I don't know what to say about the warmongering. It's warmongering, and I just keep waiting to know which one he's going to take to the brink and then take over. You know, because I can't tell that he will ever, you know, he keeps going as far as he can go without having to stop. And then he stops and then, you know, kisses Kim on the cheek. About Korea, I want peace with Korea. So any president that will actually forward that, that's great as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of struck me as kind of odd that the Democrats would pile on Trump for one of the few things he's done that makes any sense at all. And Democrats just kind of, how to go? I guess reflexively, they just have to feel that if Trump did, it's got to be bad.
Well, I actually don't think the top Republicans are anti-war. It depends on the war and whether they feel in control and in power of it and how they can make propaganda around it. I think if the Democrats wanted peace, we would have had it in the, 60 years or 50, 60 years since the stopping of that. Officially, you know, which was never a war ended. I also wanted to say about the economy, though, while it's always confusing to me, but while you were saying was true, which is stocks are looking good, I heard a report 2 days ago and said basically there had been three quarters of, I believe it was an inversion between bonds or securities and stocks or something,
mm-hmm.
and that always has been followed by a recession.
I've heard
always,
that too.
In our history.
Yeah, I don't quite understand that, but I've heard that.
And I've heard another guy, you know, that kind of hyper guy, he's on one of the channels like CNN or something, and he's got a little beard and he jumps around in front of the screen with his sleeves rolled up and talks about stocks. He said the same thing 3 months ago. He said, it's coming. Get out of it. He said, if you don't have many years to make up your losses, get out of stocks, go into bonds.
Well, bonds.
And that's the first time he's mm-hmm. ever said that in the history of his looking at it. And he's famous. That doesn't mean he's smart. But
mm-hmm.
I just question if we're not into, you know, we've got this securitized rentals and all these empty units everywhere. If we're not headed into some kind of bubble crash. And then we learned when the federal government was shut down how few of us can go even a month without our regular income. So I don't know what kind of crash it would do, but it could hit all of the municipal, governments that have money in stocks and bonds and, you know, all of those kinds of things. So how it would roll out through all of us, I'm certain that the poorer you are, the worse it will be.
Well, I think bonds are essentially debts that have to be repaid. Although I guess with municipal bonds or any kind of government bonds, the government can create money to pay those bonds off. So
remember in the last bubble they didn't. Remember lots of cities went really down and a lot of pensions mm-hmm. went really down in the 07, mm-hmm. 08, 09.
That's true. So I don't see why it'd be that much different this time. And then of course corporate bond, corporate debt, corporations can't just print up money. Or consumers can. I understand one of the big debt crises is in auto loans.
I bet that would make sense. They've been doing mm-hmm. a lot of funny stuff with auto insurance mm-hmm. and auto loans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some areas of the country, you can't get insurance, period, for under $150 a month.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, no matter what your mileage is. And by the way, I drive under 300 miles a month.
That's me,
and
too.
I couldn't get, and they offer you all those mile dollars, cheaper things. I couldn't get any cheaper insurance on it.
Gee whiz, I just thought about it. Yeah.
So there's something going on with the insurance and auto funding racket, and there's probably a connection within it in terms of how it ends up. So it's a scary time, and I don't mean to make people any more scared than they might be feeling just naturally, as we know that these times are coming to an end in terms of the planet and all that stuff. But, you know, I always am so surprised how the news people just keep saying the economy is good, and they don't even try to explain how we have so many people on the streets, etc.
Well, their economy is probably doing pretty well. You got this.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, but they pretend that's our economy, and it's not.
You know,
thank you for everything, Pear.
Well, thank you for those remarks. Thank you for those observations. Well, what do you think about the economy? It looks to me like it's there was a term, bifurcated or something. In other words, you have people at the top with an awful lot of money, huge amounts of money, then you have a lot of well-to-do people at the top, but then you have all this mass of the middle class seems to be sinking, and a lot of the middle class people wind up sleeping and living on these streets. And so this cannot be a healthy economy. Where it goes, I don't know. I mean, San Francisco is sort of like a horrible example. You know, we have lots of even some of the well-to-do people. I just read an article recently. Some of the people who work in the tech industry, who make pretty good salaries, and they live in these very high rent. I used to be working class neighborhoods like the Mission District, and they live in these expensive apartments down there, but they're afraid to go out at night because there's so many people in the streets who are just kind of living and surviving in the streets, that so these high paid people are afraid to go out. You also have in San Francisco you have some high rise building near the waterfront that is actually, it's beginning to sink or lean over. I don't know if it'll actually fall over or not, but it's kind of cracking, and I don't know. I used to live in San Francisco, and I remember when I first my first sight of San Francisco was coming over the Bay Bridge, and looking at the hills with all these these white buildings kind of blanketing the hills. Well, now you go across the Bay Bridge, and what you see is this wall of really ugly office high rises. Oh, you know, they look like kind of a wall, a real ugly wall of high rises, kind of blotting out the rest of the city. And interesting thing is that the waterfront that they're built on, a lot of that is filled land. So here's San Francisco, used to be a working class town, used to be a strong union town. Used to have a thriving art scene, artists, writers, you had the beat poets, you had all kinds of really good stuff going on. It was a great city to live in. When I first got there, a friend and I rented an apartment in the Mission District. I think we each paid about $50 a month or something like that. Of course, this was back in 1960, but it's just, so you see what money does to a city. And all the artists and the interesting people have moved out. So these rich techies who are afraid to go out, they're also bored to death because there's no interesting people in the city anymore. Of course, they're the dull people who have kind of taken over. This is what money produces. Happy birthday, America. And we hope you survive. Anyway, this has been Pear Fogering and Fight the Empire, and stay tuned for the Heather McCoy Show.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voices of a People's History, a movement of movements, on Wednesday, July 10th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. Voices of a People's History celebrates diverse movement leaders by sharing their stories. Members of our community perform readings of notable speeches and essays from inspiring figures past and present, a radically empowering opportunity to hear the echoes of history in the present day. Again, that's Voices of a People's History, a movement of movements, on Wednesday, July 10th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 10 o'clock. Coming up next, it's the Heather McCoy Show. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews author Ted Chiang about his new book of science fiction stories titled Exhalation. And at 11:30, Black Book Talks talks to Lua Ubunifu, the author of Caged and Locked, My Personal Experience with Circumstantial Depression. Then from noon until 10 p.m., it's our live broadcast from the Waterfront Blues Festival. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made